With your bill, yeah, no.
Other two bills, they don't.
They just wanted those considered, yeah, so.
Okay.
That was my kind of point, yeah.
Today, welcome to Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is March 16th, and today we're going to be holding a public hearing on SB 5535, Department of Revenue, Government's Budget, with Patrick Heath as the Department of Administrative Services. But before we get started, I'd like to refer with staff to John. What do we have?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, just a quick item of note. The agency has provided written responses to questions from Tuesday, and they've also been posted to the Tuesday's meeting date for the website. So you have two postings out there. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Okay. With that being said, we now have Patrick, can you do it in one slide? Okay, well, obviously not, so we'll let you go with what you
gavel.
Yeah, there we go. Now we gaveled in.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I won my bet.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee. For the record, Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office. I have a short presentation to share with you today about the governor's budget, the decisions that were made with relation to the Department of Revenue. some of this material will be new. Some of it will be will have been covered by the department already, but just want to walk you through it. So to start, the department administers tax programs that collect more than 95% of the general fund. In terms of the agency's operating environment and issues that we saw coming forward, you've heard a lot about the IT system modernization efforts. There's sort of four big components to that that CIO Gary Johnson talked about yesterday. Two of which I'd just like to clarify for a minute because there's some the projects described to you by the agency in their presentation are projects that are sort of still developing and haven't fully been funded in the governor's budget. Those two projects are the Processing Center Modernization Project, which seeks to provide software for the Department of Revenue's scanners to integrate into their new core system. And the efforts that CIO Gary Johnson was talking about yesterday with reference to sort of their whole suite of applications that they're looking to replace after core system goes live. They had about 300, I believe, on their slides that they talked about. And just due to sort of the nature of timing and sort of other priority work that the department had, neither of these two projects were funded, but just wanted to call that to the committee's attention. In terms of other areas outside of IT systems that the department has sort of operational areas where we looked at, property tax program funding was another area that of concern for the Chief Financial Office in developing the budget. the property tax program has been funded by typically other funds' fee revenues. And those fees have not been keeping up with the cost of running the programs. And so that's just another area of consideration there. So moving into the department's budget.
Just Representative Marsh.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just a question about the IT projects that are not funded. Will the department still have the internal capacity to advance those projects?
Co-Chair Manning, Senator.
Or develop them.
I'm sorry, Co-Chair Manning, Representative Marsh. I don't believe that's really the avenue of approach for right now. Typically, major projects and efforts go through layers of IT funding authorization through the legislature and through the Chief Executive the Chief Financial Office.
Maybe I could rephrase my question. Are those programs just on ice until the next time funding comes around, or is there any?
I believe the plan is the projects are in planning stages right now.
So that goes on.
The planning stages continue. The execution of the projects will wait until funding becomes available.
That was really my question. Thank you.
So moving on to just a quick overview of the department's budget, one of the things you might know, this first column here is their actual spend in 2013-15. Moving into 2015-17, you'll notice a big increase in their other funds spending. Part of that is the core system project, which is funded with bond funds that come to them as other fund. Two other of their transfer special payment programs that had in prior biennium been treated as transfers got moved to special payments and essentially expenditures in the adoption of the department's 2015-17 budget. And so those are reflected in that increase as well. And then you'll note that in 2017-19, there's a decrease, and those are due to some of it is that the core system project is rolling off. And then in terms of the general fund budget, it looks like it's flat. This is somewhat of an illusion because while general fund debt service is increasing for the department, there were general fund cuts made, and I'll get into those in a minute. So again, looking at the department's budget, there's primarily personal services here. The special payments tend to be payments that are made by statute for programs such as the senior deferral and the county assistance payments for property tax. And then the debt service is for the cost of the core system replacement project. So moving now into the reductions, there were a number of reductions made to essentially meet the general fund constraints in the 17-19 budget. This amounted to $18.9 million. For the Department of Revenue, this totals to about 99 positions, which is broken down between various operating divisions, the biggest three being personal tax and compliance division, that's 41 positions, the administrative services division with 39 positions, and then business division with 14 positions. There's a few positions in the executive that are reduced as well. But essentially, these are reductions that the governor's budget makes to try to balance to existing resources. In addition to the reductions to those areas, the governor's budget reduces funding for a special payments program called Nonprofit Housing for the Elderly. This is essentially unused budget authority. The department had a budget of $4.5 million, and due to the nature of the program, the applicants to the program had been running at about $3.5 million a biennium, and so there was a reduction there of approximately $1 million to try to closely match the current spend. Finally, the last two pieces, the project management office, which has been running the core system project. After that final rollout is completed, the governor's budget makes a reduction of that office to essentially, again, meet those general fund constraints, and that's $0.8 million. And then finally, there was a reduction in some administrative support to the executive division. You'll notice above there are no reductions to the property tax division. This is because, as we mentioned earlier, the property tax division has had a shortfall in their other fund sources for quite some time. And in this biennium, it resulted in a reduction of $1.7 million and three positions to their budget due to that revenue shortfall. And essentially, the governor's budget tried to ensure that we didn't cut in multiple different areas and essentially over-reduce to that function. Moving on to investments, the big investments were essentially driven by desire to improve the department's technology and then also to increase revenue. The investments included the core system replacement project, which is $9.5 million in general obligation bonds. The property valuation system, which is $3.4 million in general obligation bonds. The post-core system implementation, this is essentially funding for project costs that are now becoming sort of ongoing costs. These are things like charges for information data service at the state data center, and then an ongoing contract for the operations and maintenance of the software. And that totals to $3.8 million. There's also this policy package for the processing center modernization project. This is just to replace the contracts that were essentially taken out of the base budget, which you heard about yesterday. These don't represent, again, the actual new project for the scanner software that the department is seeking to implement. They're still in the planning phases for that. And then finally, there's two sort of investments here for increasing revenues. One is related to Senate Bill 89, which is staffing for collections that the department would be taking over in that Senate bill. There's, I believe, six positions, three FTE, and $0.9 million in other funds that were invested in that effort to increase collections. And then there was an additional investment in the governor's budget of $0.3 million in general fund for Senate Bill 254, House Bill 2272, which is a data matching program where banks would match their account data to our list of delinquent taxpayers, and the money in that is for payments of fees to the banks for using their service. And then finally, there were some statewide adjustments made to just that happen routinely to update to the DAS price list and state government service charges. And that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Any questions from the committee? Senator?
Thank you, Co-Chair. The staff reductions seem quite extent for you. Does that mean layoffs, or are there already positions that aren't filled? And then the secondary part of that is, since you receive most of our income, will you still be able to perform your job?
Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, Co-Chair Manning, Senator DeBoer, there are, of the 99 positions that were identified, Department of Revenue has informed me that 24 are vacant right now. Essentially, since the development of the agency request budget, any positions that were targeted for layoff have been, if there's been a transition, they've been held vacant to try to go through essentially attrition rather than to go through a layoff scenario. That said, in terms of the remaining positions, I'm not best positioned to speak to the other layoff planning the department has done. I know that it can be quite complicated, and so maybe this is a topic that the department could come back with or address in greater detail. But to answer your second question, on the revenue side, the department essentially over the last 3-odd years has been through a major sort of investment in their IT capabilities. And our sense in talking to them and working to them is that they're capable of producing the revenue. In many cases, they have been producing the revenue at lower levels of staff. And we essentially have the expectation in the governor's budget that there won't be a reduction in revenue as a result of the staffing reduction. One of the examples that I've been given, at least, of where this efficiency has occurred is in terms of filing enforcement. So the department informed us filing enforcement is when a taxpayer hasn't filed a return and somebody reaches out to them and says, hey, you need to file your return. And right now, my understanding is that in under old processes, this was something that was frequently took more work and more effort for people to put those letters together and to inform the taxpayers. Right now, my understanding is that the system essentially generates those automatically and informs the taxpayers their obligation. And this kind of efficiency essentially, while it doesn't eliminate the need for work, and there are other areas where more work has been created by GenTax, essentially we aren't predicting a fall off in revenue as a result.
Just questions?
Mr. Chairman, I had a couple of questions for the department, but I know that we have public testimony scheduled, and I don't want to use time that would be otherwise needed for those people. So I defer to your discretion on whether I should ask those now or after public testimony is complete or at another time.
Well, why don't we ask them now, then?
All right. Would it be possible to have the director come back and join us?
Go ahead, director, up, please.
Mr. Chairman, I don't expect to take a lot of time, but I did have about three or four questions.
Okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Director. First of all, and I realize this was before your time, but 4 years ago, this committee allocated funding to increase the number of collection agents in your department. And if I'm not mistaken, at that time, we allocated 30 positions. And I'm wondering, did we fill those 30 positions, and what has been the progress? Because it looks to me like the amount of delinquent debt remained fairly constant from that period. So tell me about these new positions. Were they filled? What did they accomplish?
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, I was not the director at that time. You are correct, which is why I brought my deputy director, who will be able to answer your question.
Chair Manning, members of the committee, I'm Chris Kautz, the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Revenue. Yes, Representative Gonberg, the answer to your question is we estimated about 31 positions would bring in roughly $33 million. We did fill those positions. We made it a priority in the 2013-15 biennium. And those positions did a combination of three things. First and foremost, they were set up at the time. The personal income tax program was not in our new core system replacement system. And so we needed to do an accounts receivable cleanup. So for about the first 6 months or so, when we had those new revenue agents that you all approved, what they did was do a large accounts receivable maintenance project to clean up those accounts that needed to either go into write-off or cancellation. Then they moved on and had their regular workload as a collector move forward for the remaining 18 months. Both they and then the auditors that were approved. So it was roughly about 15 to 16 revenue agents, about 10 to 12 auditors, and then we had some support positions in there as well. The auditors were also brought up to speed and hired at that point in time and did the work that we expected them to do. We did meet the target revenue projection at the time. We did, yes, sir. And so those positions have remained. We did not, those positions weren't eliminated at the end of that biennium and remain on our books today.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A second question is, I'm looking over your collection efforts for 2016, and I see an entry that reads adjustments and taking $150 million out of the delinquent accounts. Every agency I talk to has a different idea of what an adjustment is. What's this $150 million of adjustments in the Department of Revenue?
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg. So that is really when we have to balance the accounts receivable and enter information into the liquidated and delinquent report, we sometimes run into issues of beginning and ending balances as we go through that process. That was more pronounced in 2015 and 2016 as we did the conversion. Both of those fiscal years had data from both our legacy systems for the programs that were converting at that time during rollout and the new new Gentex system, a lot of those adjustments were to ensure that the accounting got corrected in that process between legacy and the new Gentex system. So it's more on the accounting side than the account side, if that makes sense.
Well, I believe it does make sense, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm hearing you say that this is an abnormality and not a number that you would expect on a regular basis.
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, history shows that over the course of time, we have made those types of adjustments. I went back and looked at the liquidated and delinquent debt report from 2004 forward on a yearly basis. And we do actually do adjustments every year to ensure that we can balance those beginning and ending balances inside of our books.
Mr. Chairman, I'm finding this adjustment very interesting, especially since at $150 million out of about $600 million. Were those real dollars in the first place? Were they dollars that really didn't belong in the account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gomberg, it's a combination of a couple of different things. So one of the things that we have found in the conversion from legacy systems into our new Gentex system, as we have made the accounting transitions, is that in some cases, we may not have been following the Oregon Accounting Manual to a T on liquidated and delinquent debt reporting in our old legacy system. And we are now there because we worked really hard to get there in the new system. We have also found that we've had some data conversion issues as we have moved from the old to the new. And so we have corrected those now, but we did find in some of those cases that there were issues in there that may have been double counted, appeals that were at the appeals court, those kinds of things. And so we have since corrected those. I do expect Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, members of the committee, we might face this again as we look at the fiscal year 2017 report, because we still have major programs, withholding and payroll and some of the other programs in our rollout three, that will be a combination of legacy to Gentex accounting. And so you may see another adjustment, and then we really anticipate it evening out after that.
Thank you. Subject area, Mr. Chairman, has to do with Senate Bill 89, which is working its way through the system. And should that pass, your life will become particularly interesting, Madam Director. If this statewide debt becomes, and we're talking delinquent debt that other agencies have already made an attempt to recover, if it all comes to you, what do you anticipate will be the process? What's going to change? How are you going to address that new and significant responsibility?
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg, it is a significant responsibility. And as you are...
Madam Director, before you continue, could you put your name up for the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. Committee, Chair Manning, Chair Smith, members of the committee, I'm Nia Ray. I'm the Director of Revenue. As stated, it is an increased responsibility. However, I am reasonably confident that the mechanisms and the processes we have in place will suffice to a certain degree as we receive this new debt. There will certainly need to be an assessment of the new obligations, if there are new obligations that result from Senate Bill 89. But the substance of the bill is what we do every day. So we're not assuming a new responsibility in total. We're just assuming more of what we do. So we will have to evaluate staff, those vacancies. As I mentioned earlier, we're also considering consolidating our collections unit to ensure greater accountability and perhaps greater effectiveness of our collection activity. So we're working on it. Hopefully in the very near future, I'll have more answers for you.
Thank you. Just one last question, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure, Madam Director, that we at this committee are doing our part to help you be successful for all of Oregon. And so I heard it just a couple of minutes ago that we hired 30 collections agents with the goal of getting about a $30 million return. And we heard earlier in the week that Senate Bill 89 would provide about 10 FTE and bring with it somewhere between $2 and $3 billion of debt. So I'm trying to understand the numbers here, and it sounds to me like what that really means is we're going to take most of the debt that you receive and farm it out to collection agencies because we're not going to have the in-house resources to deal with it the way we do other debt that we've already got. Correct me if I'm wrong. Help me understand the FTE numbers.
Chair Manning, Representative Gomberg. So right now, the department has various collections units. So tax debt collection in the personal income tax program, those positions, those 31 positions, and the auditors that came with them do not do anything with the other agency accounts. It's its own separate section inside the Oregon Department of Revenue. And so we don't cross paths in that way in relationship to the work achieved on one side of the books, on the general fund side, versus the other fund side. Now, the work that they do is similar. But to Nia's point, we have worked really hard, and if we have had the revenue from agencies as the agencies we currently service with the other agency account programs, if we have had the revenue generation and there is a need and desire, we have on occasion even double filled positions to ensure we have the levels we need to support those agencies in getting that debt collected. Now, it is true that currently, if we get the account from the other agency, we do our darndest to determine two things. Is this an account we can collect on, or should we put it out to a private collection firm because it's an out-of-state debt or whatever? If it's something we can collect on, we keep that. We keep it for 6 months statutorily. We can ask for another six-month extension if we want to. And then if we can't collect on it, we send it back to the agency, and they can put it out for private collections. Senate Bill 89 streamlines that process for us. So when it comes into our organization in our other agency accounts unit, we will continue to assess the debt, but we can automatically either choose to do it in-house or send it out to private collection firm. So we can manage that based on the resources that are available. It won't all automatically go out because we don't have the resources, but it is something we will have to figure out the right balance between the resources we have and what private collection firms can do. We also look at the viability, and our new systems will allow us to take a look at what's most viable debt for us to collect and what private collection firms do a better job at as well. And so we will take that type of scoring into account as we look at what accounts move back and forth in our other agency account program between collectors that we have in that program versus private collection firms.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the time, Mr. Chairman. I believe that Co-Chair Smith was the only other member that was on the committee at the time we actually added these positions, but the numbers were interesting, that we'd spend about $3 million to hire 30 FTE with a return of about $30 million. Now, certainly there's a point of diminishing returns as you wade into that in more depth, but at the end of the day, I want to make sure we're doing our job here to help this agency be successful. There's a lot of money on the table, and I'd like to help them recover as much of it as is reasonably possible.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg. That's great, and I great questions and great answers. Are there any other questions, Representative Marsh?
Thank you, Co-Chair. I have a question about a minor little item here, but it caught my attention in the financial presentation. That is the Nonprofit Housing and Care to Elderly Fund. And I pulled it up on the computer here, and it looks like what we simply do is it's a fund in which we make counties whole for property taxes paid by nonprofits that they don't have to pay anyway. It seems like, is there any other parallel program within revenue to this? It seems like an odd place for something like this to be.
Chair Manning, Representative Marsh, that is exactly what happens, is that the general fund augments the exemption for those homes that are determined by the county assessors to be nonprofit homes. And so we do pay the property taxes in lieu of the home itself having to pay that. And so is there other similar programs in revenue? We have the senior deferral program that you heard about, but it's different because it's not generally funded. People go into the program, we pay their property taxes, but we put the lien against their house, so once they're out of the program and they sell the home, then the fund is paid back. So we do see that in our property tax programs. It's in the property tax division, largely because they have the relationships with the county assessors.
But what I understand in looking at the material is that these institutions that are eligible have to be nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So they're already, aren't they, appropriate for exemption at the local level? So we're just making the counties whole. Is that my
Representative Marsh? That's correct. The goal is just to make the counties whole. Mm-hmm. It doesn't directly benefit the nonprofit homes for the elderly. They receive the exemption regardless of the general fund that supports the counties.
Yeah. And we don't do this for any other nonprofit that you're aware of?
No.
It's a odd little thing. Thank you.
Just questions?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr.
Co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And colleagues, I apologize again. I've been gone for a couple days and running around the building. Did the agency have a chance to make a presentation to the committee on its key performance measures and the trends related to those?
I don't believe so.
Yes. Chair Manning, Chair Smith, members of the committee, no, we have not. We've reserved that for phase two. We're under the impression that that will require a deeper dive than perhaps we've had time for in phase one with the amount of information we've shared. So to ensure that we meet the needs of the committee, we have committed to reviewing our KPMs, each one, in phase two.
Okay, so colleagues, I would just encourage each of you as we're prepping to review this agency, that take a few minutes and just take a look at those KPMs and see some of the good things that are going on and some of the challenges that are trending within the agency. Thank you.
And if I may, Chair Manning, Chair Smith, members of the committee, we did review, perhaps not in depth, but there was a fairly substantive discussion of one of our KPMs, maybe two, KPMs 4 and 5 on customer service. That was given by Joanne Martin, who's our personal income tax director. So if you took some notes or if you have an occasion to review, that may provide some insight on those two KPMs.
And again, Mr. Chair, if any of you need assistance on that, feel free to get a hold of John, get a hold of us. But it's worthwhile just to see the trends going on.
Okay. So any other documentation that we already have, John, can we make that available to the committee so that everyone is can catch up, especially me? Are there any other questions of the panel at this time? No other questions, and we'll close public hearing on SB 5535. And we will, thank you. And we will get ready for public testimony. Before we begin, we have five people that are signed up to provide testimony at this time. And what I'd like to do is call up the first three. We have Mr. Rob, and forgive me if I butcher your name. You will correct it, hopefully, once you get up here and go on record with your name first, please. So the first person up is Robert Manicky.
That's correct, sir.
Justin Hobson and Mike Cowles. Gentlemen, again, please, before you get started, if you will please state your name for the record, and I guess we can go from left to right. So the show is yours.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Robert Manicky. I'm a tax lawyer at Stoll Reeves.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, Justin Hobson. I'm here today as a member of the Tax Section Executive Committee.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith. I am Mike Coles, Lane County Assessor, Tax Collector.
Okay. And whoever wants to go first.
Co-Chair Manning, again, Justin Hobson. I'm here today on behalf of the tax section of the Oregon State Bar, testifying in support of adequate funding for the Department of Revenue. We've prepared written testimony outlining a series of items that the tax section believes is in the best interest of its members, as well as the general constituents and taxpaying public in the state, ensuring that adequate funding is made available to the Department of Revenue to ensure quality customer service, decent interactions between attorneys and members of the tax section and our counterparts within the Department of Revenue, as well as just a general quality of interaction between the department and everyone in the state. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Robert.
I've got questions.
Question?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Give us the specifics of what would enhance customer service.
So the tax section itself did not want to come forth with a specific position about what types of activities or functions should be supported, but typically we wanted to ensure that there was adequate funding for agents within the Department of Revenue when it comes to interactions with their tax counsel, including some of my colleagues and members of the tax section, or just the general taxpaying public. We leave it to the committee to determine what programs within the department are best suited to ensure that adequate customer service levels are met and maintained. Before we came in to testify, there were some references to the KPIs and some of the customer service indicators that are available, and the tax section doesn't have a specific position on where that focus should be, but we believe that those indicators are indicative of things that may need attention, and a decrease in the department's budget may adversely impact those customer service indicators.
Follow up. Thank you. No doubt about it. What would your attorneys within the Oregon State Bar think if they knew that key positions within the Department of Revenue had gone unfilled for lengthy periods of time, 6 months, a year, 18 months, all of which could have been enhancing customer service? What would they be saying about that?
Thank you, Co-Chair Smith. The reaction within the executive committee and the tax section, I think, is mixed, because everyone has their own anecdotal evidence of their own interactions with the department. And I think the members of the tax section have mixed reviews as to the current service levels and what those interactions entail. And so I think it's difficult for me to come before you speaking as a representative of the tax section as what's in the best interest, because there are diverse opinions as to what's best. But we believe that adequate access to justice within the tax community and within the taxpayers and my colleagues within the tax section is what's in their best interest. And I'm intentionally being vague, because I don't have a great answer for you as to what the silver bullet would be for this purpose.
Sure. Just one follow-up.
Follow, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So what if this committee said, you know what, our tax preparers and our tax attorneys are such valuable partners to the Oregon Department of Revenue that we wanted to create a direct access telephone line to where your attorneys who are representing, you know, tax issues could have a direct access to someone within the Department of Revenue to talk one-on-one on tax issues and not have to communicate through lengthy snail mail correspondence. Would that be something that would be valuable?
For that question, I'd like to defer to my colleague.
Sorry, Mr. Co-Chair. Mm-hmm. I can wait on my question.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. I have been chairing the Laws Committee of the Tax Section of the Bar for 10 years, and in that capacity, we do interact a lot with the Department of Revenue. I've noted here that we have quarterly meetings with the department. Many of the people whom you've been talking to over the last several days, the top management in the department, including the director of the department, host us three or four times a year to sit down and talk. And as to your question, Representative Smith, Co-Chair Smith, we do feel like we have a direct line to the Department of Revenue when questions and problems come up. We know who to call. Very often it's Deanna Mack, who I'm sure you are familiar with, and she will direct questions and problems to the right place, to the right resource, and things get done. Just echoing Justin's comments a moment ago about the importance of taxpayer service, it's critically important, as I'm sure that you know, because we have a self-reporting system that generates 85-90% of the general fund, and it's very important to have confidence for taxpayers, individuals, and businesses to have confidence that the system is fair and sound and well-run so that they will self-report and do what they're supposed to do under law. We feel very fortunate that that we've got a great working relationship with the Department of Revenue, and we know that all of that takes money. It takes money for training, it takes money for staff retention, keeping the good people, and it takes money to invest in the kinds of outreach that the department does consistently with the bar, and recently also with the CPAs who've been joining our quarterly meetings.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. What do you think your colleagues would say if they knew that the number of total customer complaints overall within the Department of Revenue is up over 180%, from 250 complaints in 2015 to over 700 in 2016?
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee, I think that some members of the bar who represent probably more people on the individual taxpayer level would perhaps not be surprised by that. We feel as the tax section of the bar representing all tax lawyers in the state that the answer to any issues like that is not cutting funding to the Department of Revenue, quite the opposite. We think that it's very important to have good, as I said before, well-trained and retained, knowledgeable staff who can sit with a taxpayer on the phone or in person and hear them out and enable taxpayers to feel that they've been heard and they've gotten a fair shake.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Are there any other questions? Well, let's, any other questions for Robert or Justin? Come here. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Mike, if you would again, please state your name again for the record. I want to make sure that the audio portion, for those that only have audio portions and stuff, then they understand who is speaking at the time. So appreciate it.
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Coles, Lane County Assessor, Tax Collector. Today I am here testifying on behalf of myself as Lane County Assessor, Tax Collector, on the work that the Oregon Department of Revenue does with Lane County and other counties to help support the assessment programs that are essential for collection and of assessment of taxes throughout the state of Oregon for all 36 counties. I have been in the taxation system for approximately 25 years, almost 26 years as an appraiser, assessor, various different levels. And during those 25 years, I have worked with the Department of Revenue and seen and worked with the staff and the assistance that they provide. And I'm just going to give a little short list of some of the programs that you may not be aware of some of the areas that do provide assistance to for different county assessors, and actually all county assessors. So one of the biggest areas that the Oregon Department of Revenue provides assistance to Lane County is in the assessment of complex state industrial accounts. For Lane County alone, we have 104 sites and that includes 555 accounts. That totals roughly $1.16 billion in real market value and assessed value to the county and the 82 other taxing districts that I collect for. The sites include such properties such as Boardman Chemical, Green Millers, Kingsford, Seneca, International Paper, properties that my office does not have the expertise or the really the staff time to do the correct appraisal of those properties to properly assess those sites to collect the correct amount of dollars for our taxing districts and for Lane County. Secondary, the Department of Revenue has the centrally assessed accounts, which include utilities and communication companies, among many other types of entities. One you've heard lately is probably Comcast, which is roughly about 2,121 accounts, not Comcast, but as far as essentially assessed accounts, and 113 companies encompassing $929 million of assessed value for Lane County alone. Other areas of assistance the Department of Revenue provides Lane County and other Oregon counties include training of staff, which is very important, both via the internet and in-person training throughout the state. The Oregon Department of Revenue provides tech group meetings, for example, farm forest and exemptions. Appeal support, which is very important. When an appeal is of statewide interest, the Oregon Department of Revenue provides Lane County and other counties assistance in working with and throughout the appeal process from possibly the magistrate division up to other upper levels of the tax courts. And I'm not going to go through my complete list here of items, but skipping through some of the larger ones, for example, one of the big pieces for Lane County is we're an ONC county previously. We have quite a bit of forest land.
Mike, could you define what is OSC?
ONC. It's the timber funded county previously from the Oregon County. I'm trying to think of the exact acronym. I'm sorry, co-chair Manning. I'm trying to I may be able to get corrected by my colleague next on the exact acronym.
Maybe
Oregon and California.
Oregon and California, yes.
Thank you, Representative Faye. She's on it.
Thank you, Co-Chair Manning, Representative Co-Chair Smith, Representative Bailey. So as a large number of our accounts in Lane County are in forest land, the Oregon Department of Revenue provides our forest land values for us, both our real market values and for our specially assessed and maximum assessed values for those accounts. One of the largest areas that the Oregon Department of Revenue provides assistance for Lane County and the other 35 counties include oversight of our assessment and taxation system, which includes being available to answer questions when complex problems or issues arise. As in the past 25 years or so, we've had Measure 5, Measure 47, Measure 50, a lot of change in the taxation system. And I couldn't imagine a county working without the assistance of the Oregon Department of Revenue to work its way through the complex nature of the changes in the tax laws over a large number of years. And as we're looking in the near future of possible other changes, that assistance is vital to the counties. In closing, I would just like to reiterate one appreciation for and strong support for the work and the assistance that the Oregon Department of Revenue provides Lane County and other Oregon counties in the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. One of the key performance measures for the Oregon Department of Revenue is gathering data as it relates to the county appraisal program. And the key performance measure reads, Oregon Department of Revenue will measure the degree to which county appraisal program equity and uniformity is achieved by determining the percentage of study areas statewide with real market values that are within acceptable appraisal standards. And year in and year out, the data was consistent and it was very, very acceptable. And then all of a sudden it just dropped and there's now no data. Do you know what happened on that? Why the counties aren't submitting that data, or why the Department of Revenue is not requesting that data?
Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, actually, I'm not sure why the information is not showing, because that information is being provided to the Oregon Department of Revenue.
That's what
it's, if I may, the data is usually provided in a yearly ratio study that is provided to the Oregon Department of Revenue, and also through, I believe, the health of the property tax system that's compiled by the Oregon Department of Revenue.
Perfect. John, Madam Director, maybe we could update that and get that, find out where that information is, because it's missing for the last year and a half, 2 years. Okay, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. Mike, thank you so much. The next we have Tom from Marion County Tax Assessor. I should have had you up here at the same time that we had Mike up here. And why don't we bring Wendy Johnson up forward, too? Is there any time or anyone else out there that would like to provide testimony that has not already signed up? Okay. So, sir, if you please start off with your name for the record.
Yes, thank you very much, Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. My name is Tom Rolfing, Marion County Assessor. I'd like to thank Mike for going over plenty of the programs the Department of Revenue does to help us out. Want to make a special point of the impact of the revenues generated from the property tax system, and as well, I'm sure Wendy will here following me. But the property tax revenue goes to fund local governments. And I'm not sure local governments is well defined in most of our minds, but you know, I actually also have been a member of the legislative committee on geospatial data sharing this year, and in trying to figure out how many jurisdictions would be included in that piece of legislation, you know, they thought there was maybe a few hundred jurisdictions that would be required to share data, and it turns out they're estimating closer to 1,600. Jurisdictions, including the many departments at the state level. So the property tax system goes to fund these local governments. Almost all of their revenue comes from property taxes, or much of their revenue, if not all of it. once you get below the county and city level. We also have 20 cities in Marion County we're collecting revenue for. It's a huge impact. These jurisdictions provide most of the services to our communities, and are very dependent on this. And please don't forget schools. I brought with myself today the Marion County Today here. Our county is, county commissioners are very proud of where our property tax dollars go and that we collect. And of note, I think the state should really pay attention to schools. Schools get 43 cents of every dollar collected in Marion County from property taxes. And I know it impacts the state budgets from income tax as well. I'm not sure how all of that works, but 18 cents of every dollar collected in Marion County goes to Marion County, 24 cents goes to the cities, and as you see, we have fire districts, urban renewal districts, transit districts. It's very, very important, and the work the Department of Revenue does is absolutely essential to our revenues. The state industrial and centrally assessed properties, utility companies, that the Department of Revenue values for us. accounts for just slightly over 5.5% of the assessed value in Marion County. Of course, that's going to be different by county. I think some of the counties with large wind farms and so forth would be hugely different than us. But it's very important. As Mike also mentioned, the property valuation system that the Department of Revenue is hoping to get one day is a CAMA system, a computer-assisted mass appraisal system. Every county in the state has one of these systems. I can't imagine doing our job without that. And certainly the Department of Revenue needs that as much as we do. So, with those systems help keep our records straight from year to year. It helps us with reporting, helps us stay compliant with all of the state statutes. Really needs to be supported. So with that, thank you, and I'm available for any questions.
Questions from the committee? Thank you, sir.
Chairman, Co-Chair Manning, Co-Chair Smith, my name is Wendy Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I didn't consult with Mr. Rolfing, but our testimony is almost in the same order of highlights, so I find that interesting. For those of you who don't know me, and some of you are in our revenue committee, I'm the League's tax, finance, and economic development lobbyist, so most of my time is spent in the revenue committee. So the League is strongly in support of the department's budget. In fact, we have concerns that perhaps it's not adequate enough by what the governor's recommended, because Oregon has a very interesting tax system where we're so income tax dependent for the state and so property tax dependent for local governments. We really need to work together well, state and local governments, to get all the services met across the state. The largest revenue source for our cities is property taxes. For most cities, it's 60% on average of their revenue stream. So without property taxes, those services don't get delivered. And for schools, the total property taxes is, the average is 41%. From the state total of property taxes is 41% is going into the school budget. That translates to a third of the school budget. Many of you in the building know that you put over $7 billion towards schools in the last biennium. That was your general fund, but there was another over $3.6 billion that came from property taxes. And so as you look at the department's budget, those decisions that you make affect the school budget, they affect cities' budgets, counties. As Mr. Rolfing explained, counties on average in the state, it's 21% is coming of the property taxes go to county, 20% rather. And then special districts make up the rest along with urban renewal and community colleges. So that's $12 billion in property taxes, a little over that in a biennium. As has been explained, the department partners with counties to get this assessment done. They help set the standards and work with on trainings and things to make sure it's done accurately and efficiently. I've seen this partnership because I've only been at the League 2 years now, but I've been to the conferences and see how this partnership works. And we see how important that valuation to get it right is, because if mistakes are made in valuation the first time, we're stuck with it inevitably because we're locked at the measure 53% once their MAV is set indefinitely. So we need to get it right the first time, or it will affect cities, counties, and schools' budgets for a very long time. So I can't stress enough how important it is to get it right. On the part of it that is done by the state, as was explained, the state does the central assessed property and the industrial assessed property. You saw the numbers from the department slides. It's $56 billion. I looked at the math, and that's 11% of the total. And as Mr. Rolfing explained, it varies by county how much that is, but that's 11%. That means it really matters, and it's really complex properties to those centrally assessed and industrial. So to me, it's a no-brainer that property tax valuation system needs to be funded to get the right assessment tools so the department can continue to do that assessment of the really complex and industrial properties and centrally assessed. The return on investment, when you're asked, the bonding is $3.4 million. The amount of billions that you're assessing, it's there. Another highlights that I want to make are the administration of the Senior and Disabled Citizens Property Tax Deferral Program. It just totally makes efficiency sense to have it done by the department rather than each county or city trying to handle that program. There were over 6,000 participants in that program. As I'm sure you know, we have a housing crisis in Oregon, and we'd have even a worse crisis if we didn't have that senior and disabled property tax program to keep people in homes. So we need to make sure that that's fully funded to keep those questions answered. The reverse mortgage issue was already a blip that was a problem. We don't want to see that come back. We need to keep that program stable. The league works often with the Department of Revenue. I've worked with the administrative rule process most recently on the tiny houses issue, which is a hot topic again this session. There was a problem of how that issue was being assessed across the state, and the department quickly handled that with an administrative rule change to make sure it was clear to all counties how to handle that. And I think it was satisfactorily done. All parties were heard, and a creative answer was made. And so we just applaud the department for doing that work. And then changing subjects and going from property taxes to marijuana. The state now permits local governments to impose a tax, the 3% tax, and perhaps this session it will be increased with legislation that's pending. When that legislation passed last session, I believe there was no intent for local governments to collect that money because the cash problem and how the public safety issues that would be there if local governments had to start collecting those taxes as well. It was assumed and hoped that OLCC or the department would be collecting it for the locals, and that's indeed what has happened. We've executed over 70 agreements our cities have with the department, and those collections should start rolling in. Our cities are incredibly grateful that that's happening, those agreements could be worked out, and the process was quick and smooth, and we just want to applaud the department for their work on that. Another specialty area the department assists locals with is the emergency communication tax, the 911 tax. The legislature did pass legislation to add the prepaids at the point of sale. Again, that would have been incredibly complex, but it's an important revenue stream to make sure we can pay for 911. It's still not enough, and I'm hearing from cities like John Day that it's just crippling their budget to pay for 911, and so we know there are still problems there, but without the department's work to help make that collection and then distribute it back to the PSAPs, we would be even in a worse shape than we are. Then lodging tax and cigarette tax, those are two other areas that we overlap a lot with. City's only at 2% of the revenue, but that process of distributing the revenues back is smooth, and the cities get their payments right on time and work well with our cities to make those distributions and payments. I want to just extend my praise and thanks to the legislative liaisons from the Department of Revenue. I've only been on the job 2 years, and I can't say enough how helpful it's been to have folks like Deanna Mack and Mark Garst work with us to answer the technical questions and then substantive matter questions quickly, professionally, and really help us get down to the details quickly to do our jobs and get back to our member cities. So those are all the prizes. Now I have to tell you just a few concerns that we have with what the budget looks like. You saw the list of cuts, and you asked the same questions I had. What does that mean to cut that many people when our revenues so depend on property taxes? The $1.7 million cut, I'm still not sure exactly what that means in terms of what does that mean, people, or does that mean services? And so it was still kind of vague to me. So I would just ask to go deeper on that because we can't cut people and services and then still bring in the same revenues at some point. The lodging tax area, during the department's presentation, it was noted, it was slide 23, that we're not doing enforcement in that area, and we haven't done enforcement. It's only a 1% tax, and now it's a 1.8% tax after the short session's tax increase. It's an area that is of concern because it is a voluntary tax to pay that, but there hasn't been the audits and enforcement that we would like to see like other programs. So there's legislation this session that House Bill 2400 that would allow DOR to collect for cities. There's no way that could actually happen right now because of the auditing concern, but also the fact that the department collects by region of the 10 regions, as it was explained, so they're not actually collecting by property. And this is a concern that Representative Nathanson has raised as well, that we really would like to see that improved. And so to do that, it's obviously going to take more FTE and more funding in the lodging tax area. But if we're going to pay for more marketing and tourism programs, we're going to need to improve that area with funding. And then lastly, and Representative Gomberg will appreciate this one, and you mentioned it today, Senate Bill 89. Last session, there was a bill, Senate Bill 55, that allowed the department, required the department to use tax refunds to offset debts, and it was also, the department was assigned more agency accounts. But if you look at that bill, originally it also had an offset of refunds if local governments were owed on delinquencies, and someday we would like to see that come back. It doesn't make a lot of sense to send refunds out the door to agencies. I mean, if they're owing agencies, and so you fix that, but it also doesn't make a lot of sense to send refunds out the door if they owe property taxes or other debts to local government. So as you look at that issue, we've got to be smart on how we handle debt. And we think, as I started at the beginning, we're so income tax and property tax dependent, we've got to work together. And so as you look at the budget, I think we do have to cut costs where we can, but we also have to be smart on where we how we can raise revenue, and sometimes we have to increase costs to raise more revenue. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I do have a question to start off. What I understand that it varies from county to county, the amount of assessments that are raised. But on average, what is the contributions toward education that comes out of county assessments and funding?
The total, Chair Manning, Chair Smith, members of the committee, the total from all the property tax revenue is the 12 something billion per biennium. And so we have the total, it's 41% of it. So it's a little over, it's about 4 billion-ish now. It was a little, I think it was 3.7 in the last biennium. So I don't have a per county average, but the total is that 41%.
Okay. Questions? Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for being here. And it's good seeing you. I appreciate all the work our cities do. Are the cities concerned about the level of expertise that is being provided by the Department of Revenue as it relates to customer service, the interaction between the cities and the department?
Chair Manning, Chair Smith, I'm not hearing complaints from our cities. I mean, our cities tend to work through the league and through their own city managers and such. And our main interaction is state shared revenue issues, the cigarette tax, the liquor tax, the marijuana tax that will be coming. And we work with DASA and the Department of Revenue and OLCC on those. And it's quick and responsive, and we're getting our answers rather quickly. So not really any concerns there.
I appreciate that, because part of what I'm struggling with is there's no doubt about the Department of Revenue is an important agency to the state of Oregon. It's important to the cities and counties. But when you look at the historical trend on their key performance measures, they're just dropping like this. And under expertise, 19% would rate the department as good or above, only 19%. And under accuracy, only 24%. And in your comments earlier, you were talking about how important that is. And so when I recognize that cities are a key customer to the department, and yet they're only rated at 19% for expertise and 24% for accuracy, I wonder if there's concern there. And then I start looking at the long-term vacant positions within the Oregon Department of Revenue, and specifically the number that have been vacant for over a year. And many of these positions are key to the work that's going on in the Department of Revenue as it relates to the cities. And so it's positive to me that you're not hearing concerns, even though these positions have gone vacant for a year plus.
Chair Manning, Representative Smith, there is a concern about the long-term issue that we have. There's the brain drain, if you will, the number of retirements, and we're seeing that at the city level. It's really difficult to fill a finance director position in a city or a county right now. It's difficult to fill a city manager position. So I think you're seeing the same problem at the Department of Revenue at some of those expertise level of just the number of people that are going out of this area of finance and tax. And so for long term, yes, we're definitely concerned. But at this point, the leadership has been able to respond to our questions, to what we need. But from a consumer perspective and then long term, I didn't go into the details of it, but the county budgets were incredibly concerned about. You saw the CAFA, the gap there and how it's just been stagnant. That means the counties are not getting the same money either, and their costs are continuing to grow. And so we are concerned about, well, how much money has been left off the table because the assessor didn't get out to reassess a property. But that's not really a Department of Revenue's problem. It's more of the county problem, but it's also just our system of how we pay for the functions of assessment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? No questions? At this time, is there anyone else that would like to provide public testimony?
Thank you.
Hearing none, I guess this is going to wrap up the session for the evening. And so we will adjourn and reconvene on Monday, 1500 hours, 3 o'clock for civilians. And we adjourn.